like to hear a Space Force spirit on three. One, two, three.
Space Force spirit.
You will have 5 months to prove yourself, or POTUS will install alternative command.
Oh. Watch it closely and see if it shows up.
Got you, bitches!
Start the show! It's also a screamer.
Welcome to Cord Killers, the show about watching the stuff you love when you want, where you want, however you want. I'm Tom Merritt.
Hey, I'm Brian Brushwood, and most importantly, that looked to my spying eyes as Space Force, did it not?
That was Space Force. That was a season two trailer for Space Force that's coming back to Netflix February 18th. I ended up watching all of Space Force. I must have liked it more than nothing.
Did the joke ever become anything other than a Space Force?
Yeah, it did.
It does.
Okay, good.
It absolutely all right. did.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. Anyway, that's February 18th on Netflix.
Also, it has the woman who voices what's her name? Mariner in
Tawny Newsom.
Yeah.
Tawny Newsom is in Space Force.
Yeah. Well, you know who's not in Space Force but is on the show? No. Naeem Siddiqui, a.k.a. Kuhan.
You can't prove I'm not in Space Force yet. I very well could be. We
That's
don't know.
True.
I mean, we're all really in space when you think about it.
So I can't say.
Yeah. Hey, Naeem, welcome back. It's good to have you, man.
It's great to be back.
Shall we move right on into our primary target?
Only if it's on Earth.
So provincial of you. The Wall Street Journal reports on data from a company called Antenna. They go and they get people to agree to let them monitor their emails so they can tell when people are subscribing or unsubscribing from things. And it shows that Brian's philosophy on streaming subscriptions is having an effect. That may not be how Antenna puts it, but that's how I'm putting it. Major releases are a big driver that get people to sign up for streaming services. But the data shows that if the hits don't keep on coming, people leave. The day Hamilton came to Disney Plus, they got 450,000 new signups. That's about 300,000 or so more than any other peak day, and well above the average, which is somewhere around 50,000. Wonder Woman 1984 shot HBO Max signups above 400,000 a day. That came well above the 200,000 peak that they had of their second highest day of that year. Apple TV Plus hit just below 60,000 signups when Tom Hanks' Greyhound came out, about double its highest day of that year. However, according to Antenna, about half those viewers are gone in 6 months. Viewers who sign up on a spike day are more likely to unsubscribe than other new signups. Another example, Peacock lost about half the people who signed up during the Summer Olympics in Tokyo within 4 months. Netflix and Hulu seem to buck that trend a little, though, probably because they're always adding new items. In Hulu's case, they've got broadcast stuff feeding them. Netflix's case, they've just been doing this longer, so they've got a calendar going on. And in Hulu's case, it's partly because they add episodes on a weekly basis instead of giving you all of them at once. U.S. households subscribe to an average of 3.6 services on average right now, so we may be figuring out the limit there. And it really does look like we are leaving the gold rush era of, gosh, how many more of these services can people start? And we're heading into the cutthroat competition era. The knives, Brian, are officially out.
I'll tell you what, I'm sorry, I got a little bit distracted. I'm over on WebMD right now, and I'm typing in my symptoms. A warm glow in the chest. It says either a sensation of being right or cancer. I have one or the other, but
what are the chances you're right? Brian, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it happens so rarely. I feel like you should get that checked out.
It's a good point. It's really remarkable coincidentally, even before I happened to read all of the articles this afternoon, I canceled 4 subscriptions for reasons we'll discuss later on. But it really is easier than ever to sign up and to sign away from everything.
Well, I think that's part of has always been said on this show about what's great about these services and why, you know, people will complain sometimes that it feels like cable because now I have to get this channel, that channel, this channel. But with cable, you can't just cancel easily when something goes away and sign up when something new starts. I personally am really bad at canceling, so I'm signed up to like 9 streaming services all the time. But I have friends who, you know, a friend of mine, I was like, have you seen Hawkeye yet? And he's like, I'm waiting for Book of Boba to end so I can just binge both of them back to back. And he ended up signing up a little early. But like I say, I think a lot of people are doing that, or just signing up after the big thing happens, you know, sign up after Ted Lasso. I got to drop it in early. and so they use that, you can watch all of Ted Lasso, and then you don't need to worry about Apple TV Plus until the next season or until the next show you like. It's a lot of choice, but I know a lot of people will sign up for just one a month, and they'll just have like a 12-month schedule of this month is Peacock, this month is Netflix, this month is HBO, and I'll just watch all the stuff I missed in the previous months.
Which leads me to a question for you, Tom. Do you feel like this is given that this is the new normal, do we think we're going to see pricing strategies change to encourage people to go annually for an immediate savings, when really what they're doing is making sure that they delay that thinking about it until next year when suddenly they get you again?
Yeah, Disney Plus was really successful in doing that at the outset. So I think, yes, we're going to see that and more. This is where it starts to get interesting. For the past several years, I know lots of folks out there have been complaining about the number of services because they just kept coming. And I don't think we're done entirely. We're going to see a few more services launch. I mean, obviously, when Discovery and Warner Brothers finally get together, they're probably at least going to merge a service, if not, you know, change up what they're offering. But the frequency is going to slow quite a bit on new services. And the frequency of services disappearing, I'm calling it now, is going to start. And you're going to start seeing more of those kinds of things that you're talking about, Brian. You're going to see people pushing you to subscribe yearly. You're going to see people trying to get you back and commit to, we'll give you a discount as long as you sign up for 6 months at a time. I think you're going to see a lot more of those kinds of things show up that maybe try to wrest the control away from you in exchange for a bit of a discount. But mostly what you're going to see, according to all the analysts out there, the Moffitt Nathansons and all of them, are a lot of money being spent in the next couple of years on the best possible programming these outlets can make in order to keep you. So that when you're about to cancel because, you know, you're done watching whatever it was you came for, there's another thing that catches your eye. And that's only going to work for so long. Not everybody's going to win that war, but you're going to see big, big billions and billions of dollars spent in the next year trying to out-quality everybody else.
Well, and Bryce put up on the screen a second ago the chart showing how much more Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, Apple have paid. From 2017, I think that number is like 0.86 billion. Yeah. And in 2021, it's $5 billion for Netflix. And, you know, Amazon, Hulu, Apple slices, you can almost not even, you can't even see in 2017. And now they're growing and growing. What's interesting a little bit earlier in this article is the purchased content, which Netflix has stayed pretty stagnant, but Hulu and Amazon have grown and grown and grown. So Netflix early on is about 5 billion, is now about 8 billion. But Amazon and Hulu are like 2 or 3 billion before, and now they're both around 5 or 6 billion. So they've really ramped up their acquisition costs, which is I feel like it's an interesting movement towards that. Different, and I think we have another article that's kind of about it as well.
So, yeah. Tom, when you mentioned smaller services going away in the cutthroat industry, I thought, what does going away mean? And I realized it almost certainly doesn't mean just shutting down and vanishing. It almost certainly means being absorbed by other companies.
You think there's going to be some like coalition of like, I don't know, NBC and ABC and Fox, you know, combining into like one service?
I doubt that. I don't mean Peacock, Disney Plus, Netflix, even Paramount Plus. I mean, I don't know, maybe Crunchyroll, but Sundance Now, Discovery Plus, I think is maybe one of the first ones we see after the merger goes. They just get sucked up into HBO Max as maybe an add-on. You don't have to have it, but you can add it on. But Brian, that's a really good point. I think you're going to see a lot of these services either merge into other services or become add-ons on other services rather than independent services, especially the smaller ones, not the big rocks, but the smaller ones.
If I can lodge a prediction that I there's a good chance I've already made, is we're entering an era of the haves and the have-nots. And the haves are those companies where we are never more than a month away from the next season of the thing that we can't quite justify canceling this over because, well, I'm just going to sign up again in 3 weeks. And the have-nots, which are the back catalog havers who show up, who create, you know, we got thousands of things in the catalog. And they're like, great, what else you got? What's coming out next? Next, what do you mean? Yeah. We got all this back catalog. And they're like, yeah.
And don't forget the free services. That's Fox's. Fox's take on this is Tubi. They're pushing Tubi. They were advertising Tubi during the football playoffs this weekend as like, hey, it's free. We don't want your money. Well, we do, but we want it through your eyeballs, not through your direct credit card.
Yeah. Which is so inefficient because it's much easier to get money with your hands and take it out of your wallet. To actually extract it through your eyeballs is very painful.
But yeah, I think we're also going to see a lot more of that consolidation of Pluto, Zumo, Tubi, Peacock's free tier becoming the, you know, sort of the entrance ramp to get you into the systems as they consolidate, as they start to merge and bundle up until we only have, you know, I don't know what it's going to be, 4, 5, 6 of these major players, but you're going to have Disney, Hulu, ESPN Plus. That's already there. They're already kind of leading the way. I think that's what the future is going
to
look like.
Yep. So one real quick pro tip, if you want to subscribe to the Brian philosophy of sign up for whatever you want, whenever you want it, and then cancel it once a month, just cancel everything. Does keeping everything in one bucket really help? For me, it's Amazon. I had to, just the mere fact of having to go to the app store to check and see a different vertical. It's like, look, I could do this once. And it turns out that there were like 4 subscriptions I had. I signed up for Showtime for a 7-day free trial. And then I canceled last night and then I canceled it today. Also found out that I had Stars and Noggin and several other things out there. And then meanwhile, like because Peacock is on its own website, that's a sneaky one that is going to be hard for me to remember when we finish watching Miami Vice to go out to that ecosystem and manually disable it. So meanwhile, like when you subscribe to a bunch of things on Amazon, it costs the same amount and they have a very convenient tab, subscriptions. And all you do is say unsubscribe and it says, do you mind telling us why? And you say, get bent. And then you're done.
Yeah. And then that's the future, right? That's the next step after this, after we figure out who the winners are. Then the platforms that manage that stuff for you start to coalesce. And we'll continue to have them. We'll have Amazon, we'll have Apple in varying different ways. You see HBO Max out there saying, Amazon, they just want to take our money. That's why we got out of there. So it's never going to be everything available on every platform yet. That's down the road. But you can definitely make your life easier by using one for most things, even if you can't use it for a Peacock or something like that.
Well, and there is one way to make your life even easier, Tom.
Hmm. Yeah, what's that?
It's to totally disregard everything I just said and don't go to Amazon, but instead go to patreon.com/cordkillers and subscribe to us because we all know you're never going to unsubscribe. You're going to value our advice on watching what you want, when you want, on whatever device you choose. You're going to want to support us to be one of the, oh God, I still have the 3-digit disease, Tom. It's very painful. One of the nearly 1,000 bosses that we have over at patreon.com/cordkillers, where you get your very own RSS feed. You get early access to our Spoiler in Time episodes and exclusive access to our very secretive after talk.
Yeah. For every person below 1,000 patrons on Cord Killers, a small part of Brian and my internal organs disappears.
Yeah. And guess where that money comes from? Out of her eyeballs, which is right. Very painful.
Please, please stop and join patreon.com/cordkillers. End our painful eyeball problems. Let's talk about out of Variety. Variety has an article out by Rebecca Rubin titled, "Has Sundance Become a Film Festival for Streaming Services?" Here's the pitch. At the Sundance Film Festival this time, Apple spent the most, outbidding others to get Cha-Cha Real Smooth for $15 million. Rubin points out that streamers can do this because they don't have to sell movie tickets to make money off an acquisition. And the studios, who do have to sell theater tickets to make money, are having a harder time than ever getting people into theaters for anything that doesn't have at minimum 3 Spider-Men in it. There are more hybrid auctions as well, like Emma Thompson's Good Luck to You, Leo Grand, which sold to Searchlight and Hulu. So Searchlight will put it in theaters. Hulu will put it online, little joint venture. The unspoken implication here is that nobody knows when theaters are going to be back in full and what that will mean for smaller and indie films when it does eventually happen for sure. In the meantime, there's sure money from streamers, which may be moving the indie scene onto the home screen, Brian.
And I'll tell you what, if there's any, I stumbled into being right again twice in a row, like that would ever happen, and we're entering a world of the haves and the have-nots, this becomes like this insatiable appetite for new content is only going to get stronger. And I can't see why. I mean, I don't even see I don't even see a path to theaters really surviving outside of being owned by Netflixes and Hulu cinemas or whatever.
Well, I think you still will have the big, you know, like the Spider-Mans or the Suicide Squads or, you know, the big tentpole movies will still make money. And theaters, you know, I was a supervisor in a movie theater for 3 years. The theater makes their money on the concessions, right? It's not a movie business. It's a concession business. I think we all know that. But even I, you know, I went to probably more movies than the average person in 2021 after I got vaccinated. One big thing AMC did while I was working there, I think it was 2018 or 2019, was they added a artisan films program, which was the idea was to here are the indie movies, the movies that might not make it, you know, as big as they would otherwise. And the two artisan films I saw last year were The Green Knight and Last Night in Soho, both of which were, I don't think would have been artisan films in 2017. Like it really
Green
felt
Knight
like they...
Have, right?
Yeah, and Last Night in Soho is an Edgar Wright movie. Like, I don't think that would, you know, especially coming off of Baby Driver, I don't think it would have been an artisan film. So I feel like even the theaters are now, like, calling movies that are decently budgeted and with a decently, you know, well-known cast, decently well-known director, they're still calling those movies artisan films. House of Gucci, Licorice Pizza, West Side Story. Like, West Side Story is a Steven Spielberg movie. That's an artisan film, you know? Like, it really feels like...
That little upstart, Steven Spielberg, put together a little film. Let's watch.
Yeah.
So here's my big question to both of you guys is, do you think this is the kind of thing where it's going to be a very public buyout of movie theaters by the streaming services? Or do you think behind the scenes, AMC will quietly become owned by, you know, your Amazons or Netflixes or whatever, but they'll maintain the branding on it? Or do independent theaters and chains continue to thrive and survive? Like, I don't see the Alamo selling out to anyone.
I think the big chains, of which Alamo is trying to be one, but the AMCs, the Regals, are still going to stay independent. Maybe at some point a streamer buys a share, but like AMC is owned by a big Chinese company. Like, I don't think they're interested yet in selling to a streaming service. And streaming services, you know, Netflix especially, is not really interested in putting their movies in theaters. They don't really care about that vertical. You know, Amazon does, and in the article actually specifically mentions two Amazon films, The Big Sick and Late Night, both of which were Amazon films, but Amazon put in the theaters, took some money out, and also put on Blu-ray, by the way, which is something that Netflix doesn't do and very much frustrates me as a Blu-ray purchaser. But I know that I'm a dying breed there. I don't see that happening. You know, there might be some of the smaller independent cinemas that get bought up by an Amazon, as they are currently being bought up by the Regals and AMCs of the world. But I just don't see it happening, at least not anytime soon. But I do see movies for adults, you know, not like adult movies, but like movies that you can't take your kids to necessarily. Not that West Side Story is one of those. You can take your kids to West Side Story. It's West Side Story.
You're talking about boring movies. They're called boring.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like those are starting to move towards the streamers. And I don't know if that's a good thing. I don't know. Knives Out sequels are going to Netflix. That's really frustrating.
No, I 100% agree. I like arty cinema being in a cinema. I prefer that to it
love
only
arty
being...
Cinema. Anytime I go into a cinema and I see arty... I'm like, Arty Cinema's here.
But great. my point is I understand right now the contrast has turned way, way up. It's either a giant tentpole popcorn TV or movie, or it's streaming. And I'm with you. Like, there are certain movies that, like, for example, the re-release of the Guillermo del Toro in black and white, is it Monster Alley, I think? I want to go see that in a theater to experience it in a theater environment.
Yeah, two things real quick. The Wanda Group, the Chinese company that owns AMC Theaters, recently diluted. Silver Lake bought a bunch of shares, and it recently diluted its shares. So they don't have the control over AMC. In case there was anybody out there following that, wondering about when Naim said that, that is kind of changing because of the pandemic.
That is true. And I think probably a big part of it was COVID affecting, yeah. You know, like, yeah, yeah. And also probably partially the meme stock of AMC, making it a lot more palatable for the company to be like, let's get out now, make the money that we make. And
Going back to this idea, to Brian's question from a minute ago about, you know, will the streamers own the theaters? We got two different things here, and you guys touched on it just now, which is there's the how many Spider-Men are in it? Great. We'll play that. That's going to keep AMC and Cinemark and Regal going for a while. So I don't think streamers buy them. What we need to get over is this idea of, well, it has to be in the theaters first for every movie. And I think we are getting over that. And the faster we get over that, the better. Whether it's in an AMC theater or a Landmark or some even smaller art film theater, there should be partnerships between the streamers. Maybe not owning, but partnering with small theaters to say, yes, these are going to be on Netflix, but we'll sponsor a Netflix night out at the theater to say, like, come see it on a, you know, on a cool 16 millimeter projection. Come see it in a double feature with the actual film that inspired it, that it references. Do that and play to the cinephiles out there, and you'll get them to not only watch it on Netflix, but also go out to the theater and, you know, buy some popcorn and keep the theater in business.
Yeah, I know that was a tough thing. You know, as Netflix has been nominated for more Academy Awards, AMC always does a, like, watch all the Academy Award nominated movies in, like, a, you know, 3-hour block over a couple of days, or I guess a 12-hour block over a couple of days to see all of the movies that are nominated. And, like, when Roma was nominated, AMC did not have Roma in that block. It was like, here's all the movies. And also, I guess, go watch Roma at home if you want. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
Wild theory that I just want to throw out there is, I remember seeing the movie Meet Joe Black, which was released the same weekend as The Waterboy. And the reason most people watch those two movies in the theater is because they were going to play the trailer for the new Phantom Menace movie. I would not be shocked to see some kind of friendly partnership where it's like, get early access to the first episode of Netflix's new whatever a week before it comes out if you watch this Netflix movie and the move in the movie theater.
I mean, if AMC will rent out to Fathom Events for operas and things, you know, that church. Have an audience, but it's a smaller audience.
The cinema across the street turns into a church.
Absolutely do. Yeah. Well, I'm not even going that far. I'm just talking about AMC saying in some of our downtime, we'll do Fathom Events for operas and things and Doctor Who special episodes. Why wouldn't they do that for some indie films where it's like, you don't have to have the 90-day run of, you know, every movie isn't the same. Have some different ways of approaching it. All right, let's talk about what to watch and under surveillance.
Not like real estate. It's all about location.
Under surveillance.
Paramount Plus released a trailer for the Halo TV series featuring Master Chief and an appearance from Cortana. The series will not be canon, at least not in relation to the games, which actually isn't that different than The Witcher, though for different reasons. The TV Halo timeline will be referred to as the Silver Timeline. Halo arrives on Paramount Plus March 24th.
Naim, did you ever get deep into the Haloverse?
No, I never had an Xbox. Halo's all been a party game to me. This trailer felt very generic, like down to the like epic music that turns into In the Air Tonight. Yep. Like it was, you know, it was fine. It seemed okay. I didn't like recognize any of the actors. I think Bokeem Woodbine's in it. That's the one person whose name I knew when I looked it up on Wikipedia. I'm sure the Halo heads will enjoy it.
Well, this is one of those things that I want to tread lightly, because Halo has a very passionate fan base for those who are deep in it. They have their own universe of novels and all of that stuff. So I am certain, as somebody who has only casually played a little bit of multiplayer, I would be very curious, cordkillers@gmail.com, if you are somebody deep in the gravity well of Halo, how do you guys feel about this is what I want to know.
The other interesting thing was preemptively coming out and saying, like with Witcher, The Witcher is based on the books and then the video games are separate. In Halo, they're saying they came out ahead of time and like comics, video games, all still part of the same universe, TV show, new universe, separate universe, not invalidating. We're not doing what Star Wars did. Two separate universe.
I mean, if anything, they're doing what Star Wars originally did, which is in the novels, the expanded universe.
Except they're saying the TV show not part, right?
Correct. Whereas yeah, I guess they're preemptive. Was part. You're right. You're right.
Specifically splitting up.
It's like there's Marvel Comics and MCU, right? This is the MCU, and then the video games and the books and the comic books are Marvel Comics.
That works. A reboot of Texas Chainsaw Massacre is coming to Netflix February 18th. There's a new trailer out promoting it, directed by David Blue Garcia, who wrote Don't Breathe and also wrote both Evil Dead movies. John LaRocquette returns as narrator, just like he was in the 1974 original. This new movie is considered a direct sequel to the original, though taking place long after it. In fact, producer Fid Alvarez said, "I think the first movie really hit a nerve when portraying that culture clash between the countryside and the city. Back in the 70s, the hippies were representing the youth of the city. This time, they're more like millennial hipsters from Austin, who are very entrepreneurial and have a dream of getting away from the city and back to the countryside." He didn't specifically say 7 acres. They're trying to gentrify small town America. And let's just say they encounter some pushback, Justin Robert Young.
Okay, I'm Brian.
There are more than one character in my read. That's
okay, all right. Two things. Number one, watching this trailer, one of the beauties of the original movies is that, boy, that was definitely Texas. This whole trailer, I'm like, that's not Texas. not at all. Second of all, I called resident Chainsaw Massacre expert Jason Murphy and asked him his thoughts, and he gave me a version. I'm going to gussy it up a little, but he said, basically, I'm going to describe a movie. It's about a woman who decades ago was the lone survivor of a crazy madman who went on a killing spree. Decades afterwards, she's still processing what that's like. Did I just describe for you Halloween or the Texas Chainsaw Massacre? And I was like, all right, that's
great. Your answer was yes, you did.
Right.
Yeah. Now I get it. James Gunn told Deadline's Hero Nation that he has approached HBO Max about another Suicide Squad spinoff series, and the company seems receptive to it. HBO Max had no comment officially on whether Peacemaker will get a second season or whether there will be other Suicide Squad spinoffs, but both seem likely. James Gunn implied that the renewal of a second season of Peacemaker is just waiting on him to dot the I's and cross the T's. However, Gunn would not say what ideas he had for a new series, except that it would not be as much of a comedy as Peacemaker is.
Naim, have you watched Peacemaker yet?
I haven't yet. It's on my list of things I need to watch. Everyone's raving about it, so I definitely want to watch it. One thing is he never specifically said it's going to be Suicide Squad related. He said in the universe, so it could be something else. DC
in the Suicide Squad universe. But you're right. He did. He was sort of like leaving himself room to be like Suicide Squad's in the DC universe. So
So it'd be interesting if it. I mean, I'd expect something Suicide Squad related because that's something he's already done. But
yeah.
It's very possible that he's like, no, I want to do, you know, I want to do a Plastic Man series, which would be great.
Oh, my God.
Also,
that would be
great.
Comedy,
so like probably not that, but it'll be incredible, right?
Also, in that same article, he was very coy. He did not confirm or deny whether or not there would be a second season, but he did just casually drop that it's the most popular show on the planet right now. So I'm going to guess that this is all keep them jaws shut during negotiations time.
Well, and he also literally said, I got to dot the I's and cross the T's. So I think what I took from it was like, HBO could announce a renewal if I got off my butt and filled out some paperwork and like answered a couple of questions.
You know what I know, what HBO knows, and we all know it.
Exactly. All right, let's talk about what we've had our eyes on when we're not using them to pay for things. We're watching things. Naim, what are you watching?
So what I have really been enjoying, in fact, I binged it all in less than a week, there's a CBS show, Ghosts, there's also the original BBC version, which is on HBO Max. Same name, Ghosts. It stars Charlotte Ritchie and a bunch of... The premise, I'm sure if you've seen the ads for the CBS version, which is also on Paramount Plus, which I also did watch. But the premise is basically this woman inherits a house and she and her husband move into that house because they decide they're going to turn it into a hotel or a B&B. And it turns out the house is haunted. And then the woman has a near-death experience and suddenly she can see the ghosts. I like the American version as well. I think it's fun. But the British version really, really captivated me. I've never watched a lot of British sitcoms, but I am a fan of British humor, and I really have been enjoying Ghosts.
Cool.
That's cool. I have been fascinated by ghosts. And I mean, not just in my regular everyday life, but I mean specifically the two television series that you're talking about. They look funny. They look really, really funny.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the American version is a little bit more broad, you know, like you're going to do more broad comedy in America than you're going to do. And also Ghosts, the American one has already aired 13 episodes and they already got a back season pickup and a second season pickup. Ghosts, the British version, has 3 series and 20 episodes, including the two Christmas specials. So like, they're really moving stuff differently in the American version. They've introduced more lore in the American version to the way the ghosts work, because you just kind of have to, because you can't do it in as little of time.
All right, Brian, we need to talk about what you watched.
Yeah, man. Look, I signed up for Showtime last night and then I canceled it this morning. Because it's just that easy. go to Amazon.com. And you only need 4 hours to watch the documentary series We Need to Talk About Cosby by W. Kamau Bell. At the very beginning, it says, hey, a lot of people are processing everything about Bill Cosby right now. A lot of people did not want to appear on camera for this documentary because they're still processing. Other people were comfortable talking it out as they process. It goes exactly the way you would imagine it would. 4 hours of, he did this really good thing, groundbreaking stuff, but also was a rapist. He also did this other thing that was really good, but also he was a rapist. It's just that for 4 hours, which if you're looking for surprises, I don't think you'll find many. Mm. But if you're looking for other voices on this weird meditation that is being had, I think it's a worthy watch.
And sometimes that's useful, just to, even if you're not hearing anything surprising, to just hear other people talk it out.
To be reminded of things that you had forgotten. Like I had forgotten that, I believe the number, I'm probably wrong on this, is 13 states changed their laws to alter the statute of limitations for rape so they could get Bill Cosby. That's a move that I hadn't I'd forgotten about. It was crazy.
Yeah. It's not simple.
No, in fact, it's so complicated. I bet somebody would do a 4-hour documentary meditating on the complicated question.
Right. All right. On a simpler note, here's a Chinese science fiction story about a bus exploding. I really like this. It's on Viki. It is requires you to read subtitles if you don't speak Mandarin or don't understand Mandarin, but it's really, really good. This premise is done so well, and it's done in a way that I wouldn't have expected going in. I kind of liked the premise, and I loved the way they executed it. Woman gets on a bus explodes. Then she wakes back up on the bus earlier before it explodes. A couple of times through before she really realizes what's going on. But you don't start there. You actually start after she's been through the time loop a few times. And then she starts to try to explain to people what's happening. And of course, nobody believes her and all of that. So then there's spoilery type things that I would have to tell you to really convince you to watch it. But there are other people that can get pulled in, and there's ways of preserving information across the time loops to help them out. But it's very simple. This bus is going to explode at 1:45, no matter where it is, or will explode if you spook the person who has control of the bomb. And they're trying to figure out how to stop the bomb so that they can get out of the time loop.
So
otherwise, she's just going to be stuck in the time loop the whole time. Again, it's called Reset on Vicky.
It sounds like a reverse Groundhog Day with a little bit of Memento, where you keep getting surprised by earlier, more and more context.
Well, it's that way at the Memento stuff for the first couple episodes, for sure. Then you start to proceed more linearly. But still, there's every time I think like, okay, it's got to get boring now because we know what happens. And they discover another thing, or they try another thing, or I'm sitting here like, why don't you just go up and ask the bus driver to stop? And then she does it and it doesn't work. And you see why, and you're like, oh yeah, I guess that might happen. It's a really fun puzzle show, if nothing else.
Cool.
All right, Bryce, what should we be on the lookout for?
Hey, Jeff, who is our 894th boss, shared an on the lookout pick in an email with us. Jeff writes, I have a what to watch suggestion with the docuseries How To with John Wilson on HBO, with the second season recently released. The genius of this show is the ability of documentarian John Wilson to weave together a narrative based based in the form of a tutorial like concept based on captured footage, and is nothing short of the single best love letter to NYC since The Warriors. This has Brian Brushwood written all over it.
Oh, except for it was definitely addressed to one Bryce Castillo, who brought this to our attention with season one when it first came out, right?
That's right. This was actually one of my Killy picks at the end of 2020. I think this is great. Like these are episodes that are basically like video essays about how to interact with strangers and make friends, how to I don't even remember, because they really go off the topic quite a bit, or they lean so far into it that it's very hyperbolic. And just the coincidences and the amount of footage that Wilson gets is kind of incredible. There's an episode in season one that talks about scaffolding, because there's scaffolding all over New York. And it talks about why there's scaffolding everywhere and why there's more scaffolding. And he goes to New Orleans to a scaffolding convention. He ends up taking footage of I believe a casino that they were building at the time, which had all this scaffolding as well. And like 2 days later, all of the scaffolding and that construction site collapsed. And he just happened to be there like the day before, like the week before, talking about scaffolding and all of that stuff. And also like has footage, I don't know how, of like two discrete instances of taking off in an airplane and seeing a fire on the runway. Video clips.
Like, I'm tempted to believe that the original title was, no, seriously, now watch this. Like, I got this shot too.
With John Wilson. Yeah. And it's really interesting. It's a show where the editing and the narration and the story concept are the entire thing. And it's a little awkward if you're a little sensitive to slightly cringy sort of things, but it's not a lot of like being put into a weird situation. It's just this guy's very kind of brash, just a little low, like subdued but brash. So that is How To with John Wilson. That's an HBO show. It's streaming on HBO and HBO Max. There are now 12 episodes now that the second season just finished airing. Streaming now. If you've got something we should be on the lookout for, email it to us, please. cordkillers@gmail.com.
Oh, Brian, will you ever be able to have a computer to run your empire off of?
Maybe one day I'll own one, but until then I'll use these systems that are on loan from our friends over at doghousesystems.com/rogue. You got to upgrade your computer sometime. Well, you know it, I know it, the whole damn world knows it. Spell it ROGUE. Use promo code ROGUE at checkout. Get yourself an SSD. That rhymed.
Yeah.
Better than the hamster wheels they used to have me on here.
Yeah.
Well, if that's all, then I motion we move on to the front lines.
Yes.
Front lines!
I love me a 1960s sports reference, so I'm very happy about this story. For the first time since 1967, two major broadcasters in the U.S. will simulcast a sporting event. In 1967, NBC and CBS both broadcast the very first Super Bowl. Now, another thing I love is an 80s sports reference to the USFL. And on April 16th this year, Fox and NBC will both broadcast the return of the United States Football League as the New Jersey Generals face off against the Birmingham Stallions. The USFL is unaffiliated to the original one. This one is controlled by Fox Sports, and Fox and NBC have split up broadcast rights for its season. NBC Sports, for the simulcast, is going to handle the pregame, halftime, and postgame. Fox is going to produce the game coverage, and unlike the Super Bowl, you're not going to get two different versions. Both networks are carrying the same programs with the same non-local commercials.
Here's the thing I never thought I'd say. Naeem, Bryce, as two people who likely are more interested in football than I am, what do you guys think?
Listen, it's Brian, you're here and I'm like here. So it's not that much. Although I am surprised at how many football leagues have popped up in the last few years. There was the AAF, which then folded, the XFL, which then got bought by The Rock, and now the USFL. It seems tough for, because I know the XFL is also planning on coming back. Mm-hmm. So it seems tough for there to be like to support this many leagues, especially as football, it feels like people are diminishing interest as
the attempts are all being made to bring football year round.
Right.
The idea is we want to have a way that people can watch football every week year round without stopping if they want to. We know that more people will watch the NFL than whatever else we get out there, but we got to keep trying until we find a way. That's what the AAF was about. That's what the XFL has been trying to fill. That's what the USFL is going to try to fill. I don't know why they don't try to bring back the WFL, the World Football League from the 70s. Come on, if you're going to try all these things,
I'm sure it's coming soon. Yeah. I don't know why they don't televise CFL games. Just move the CFL season.
They televise CFL games on ESPN Plus, and it was beautiful this past year. I could watch every BC Lions game. It was the best.
Bring back the World League of American Football. That was in the 90s.
I liked the AAF. I'm into the idea of spring football. But it's very difficult because football is so demanding and the good players don't want to play in two leagues at once. But
I mean, if the CFL could shift a little more, but they can't. And there's very good reasons why they can't. But that would be the solution. But they
maybe
have to
if you like sports, you should watch baseball. It's a superior sport anyway.
All right. And in other news, it's earnings time. Marbles. So we have lots of check-ins on how the streamers are doing. Peacock announced it has 16 million paid subscribers when you count free users. Peacock reported 24.5 million monthly active users. Peacock makes about $10 a user, which is better than they expected. All I'm going to say to Peacock is, you just wait till I get tired of Miami Vice. I am outie.
Hold my beer, Peacock. HBO and HBO Max now have 46.8 million domestic subscribers. That's up 5.3 million on the year. Their average revenue per user is $11.15. Globally, HBO Max is at 73.8 million, up 13.1 million. That's the biggest single-year subscriber increase in HBO's 50-year history. AT&T said the merger of Warner Media, which runs HBO Max with Discovery, is expected to close somewhere between April and July. So by July, it will no longer be part of AT&T. The new company is, if you don't recall, going to be called Warner Brothers Discovery because they don't have imaginations.
Yeah, well, get ready because Disney Plus announced it's going to expand to 42 more countries, including South Africa, Turkey, Poland, and the United Arab Emirates. This will put Disney Plus in 106 countries, a little more than halfway to where Netflix is. Disney says it should hit 160 countries by the end of fiscal 2023. Disney says it has 179 million subscriptions across Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN+. So there.
Within the next year, Disney's going to catch Netflix on subscribers.
Well, name one other company that's got anything going on. I think we've covered them all.
Let's see. Disney, I got the ping pong. Oh, we didn't get Viacom CBS this time, did we?
I was teeing up the next story.
Oh, Apple!
Stand by Tom and ready Tom. Cue Tom and go Tom.
Is that a segue?
Yeah. Hey, you're not supposed to call those out. What someone once told me.
Tom's not used to segues is what it is.
But I don't believe it. Say it again, Brian.
Yeah, who else is there in that space?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Brian. Apple CEO Tim Cook focused on the number of awards and nominations that Apple TV Plus programming slate has enjoyed, 200 award wins and more than 890 nominations, rather than touting viewership or subscriber numbers. He did mention popular feature films, Tragedy of Macbeth, Coda, Swan Song, threw in some plugs for upcoming new series Severance and The After Party. And when an analyst questioned him about where Apple TV Plus may go, for example, would it want to acquire a studio of its own? Cook said, "We don't make purely financial decisions about the content. We try to find great content that has a reason for being." Cook went on to say, "We love shows like Ted Lasso and several other shows." Literally what he said. I can't remember him. It's not what he said, but he did
I wrote Tim Cook's speech for this, so that's why I just didn't remember all the other shows.
"We love shows like Ted Lasso and several of the other shows that have a reason for existing and may have a good message and may make people feel better at the end of it, but I don't feel that we've narrowed our universe to things we're selecting from. There's plenty to pick from out there, and I think we're doing a pretty good job of it as we speak."
Oh my God, you want to talk about the Texas sharpshooter fallacy? That dude just broadsided a barn and he's in the middle of painting a target like, "Oh, Ted Lasso, we're great."
And if you I watched the first episode of The After Party. I think The After Party is great so far. I'm really excited about it.
Okay, that's good to know.
And a few other notable notes. Sony's Master of the Universe film will premiere on Netflix this summer. Deadline reports the sequel to Mortal Kombat is on the way from Warner Brothers, and HBO has approved a third season of The Righteous Gemstones. Take that, add that to your religion. And Disenchantment's fourth chapter has a new trailer in advance of arriving on Netflix February 9th. Sorry, what I meant to say is...
What you were trying to say is HBO got religion and renewed Righteous Gemstones.
I'm just saying if you believe in miracles, then this is evidence that a popular show gets renewed.
All I need is a miracle.
Let's
get to the dispatches from the front.
Is you.
Jeff writes in, "Hey, Bossman number 894 here with a few thoughts from recent episodes. $20 is the proverbial line in the sand for Netflix monthly, which would mark approximately 60% increase in my subscription rate since signing up less than 10 years ago. And that, my friends, is a bridge too far. I would then only dip in and out as warranted." So we wouldn't stop watching altogether. Number two, "I believe I am a unicorn when it comes to cord killers, and that I'm not a sci-fi guy in any way, shape, or form. I've never seen a single Star Wars, Star Trek, MCU, DC piece of content, well, ever. And I don't share this as some sort of dumbass humble brag, but instead to say I find the informational value of your shows so compelling and thought-provoking that I can't not be a patron. Just wanted you to know us non-sci-fi folks are out there."
See, if there were only six more people like Jeff, I wouldn't have my terrible three-digit disease.
Be like Jeff.
Nine more people like Jeff.
Well, you know what? We're at the end of the month, which means a bunch of people are about to drop. We probably need 20 or 30 more Jeffs is what I'm saying.
Let's just get 200 or 300 more Jeffs going right now. Why don't we in Patreon?
Let's get like 500 more Jeffs.
Let's just get a couple thousand more Jeffs going.
501 Jeffs, 502 Jeffs.
2,000 Jeffs, please.
Innumerable Jeffs.
B. Lissa writes in saying, "Hi, Tom, Brian, and Bryce. The recent news of a Netflix price hike made me realize that Netflix is getting close to the price of HBO. And at the same time, HBO Max has run two promos recently with price breaks for new or lapsed subscribers, something I can't remember Netflix ever doing. I definitely think $15 a month is a price point above which I'll be pausing my Netflix account much more often." And again, nobody's saying they're going to walk away.
Yeah,
everybody's just talking about taking a break. "I've also found a way to save money on some other streaming services, a sort of modification on the chicken challenge. Once you cancel, they try to lure you back with offers that give you a temporary discount. I've done this with Paramount Plus and Stars. It's worth the time for those of us who are looking for any savings." Thank you very much, Belissa. As a matter of fact, that accidentally happened because we host a few premium passworded videos on Vimeo, some magic tutorials and stuff, and I just straight out forgot to renew, and then it hit me up today saying, "Okay, we get it. It's expensive. Please renew and get 20% off." Like, all that stuff is automated. I was like, don't mind if I do.
Thank you so much. And then finally, we got this from Shelton in Virginia. "I'm a new boss as of today." Oh, welcome, Shelton. "And I just had a quick question. Are there plans on bringing back the movie draft? The winter and summer movie drafts were a really fun part of the show. And 2022 seems like it'll be a gigantic year for movies, from Marvel to DC, Avatar sequel, and everything in between. Thanks for your time. Love the show.
Holy cow. I think we have our topic for our after talk segment for the patrons only.
Yeah. Yeah, it's time to talk about it, for sure. Like, it does.
Only will take less than 4 hours, and we'll actually have a definitive, well, we won't have an answer.
And really, we just need to talk to Eileen, the commish. We really just need commish. To ask her what she thinks.
Yeah, is there a permanent enough roster? Yeah, good.
See, you know, okay. I've been doing a solo movie, like a movie draft based on exactly on the Court of Killers, an Attack or Great Night movie draft. So, by the way, if anybody ever drops out, hit me up. I'm happy to do it. I've been doing it with a group of friends of mine for years, and yeah, the last couple of years we just haven't. And it's just every so often, it's like, so are we gonna do this again? It's like I don't know. Are we going to do it? Like, we're going to do it again eventually. It's going to happen. It's just, when is it the time right? So. Mm-hmm.
Well, yep. It's getting close. If not now, soon.
I mean, maybe, we'll talk. Soon.
Yeah, yeah. if you're a patron, listen to the after talk. We'll talk all this out. Thank you, Naim, for being with us. Before we go, is there any place people can go to follow you and see what you do and check out all your work?
Yeah. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Kuhan. Every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time, or most Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern time, I'm on a show called Technically Correct. That's on youtube.com/geekswhodrink. It is a trivia panel show. We play trivia game and we try to make funny jokes. It's a lot of fun. I also do a baseball podcast called Our Baseball Weekly. You can find that wherever you find podcasts. And I don't know, follow me on TikTok, Kuhan Luke.
Excellent. Our website is courtkillers.com. Our email address is courtkillers@gmail.com. We're live on twitch.tv/nightattack. Also carried on diamondclub.tv. Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern is when that happens. 4 p.m. if you're in the Pacific time zone. 3 mountain and you figure it out. No, 5 mountain, whatever. You can figure it out. You're used
to it. Yeah, but what if you're on the moon, Tom? What time is it on the moon?
What time is it on the moon right now? Goodbye.
Abolish time zones.
Hey, Tom Merritt, what's going on?
I'm just hanging out here watching this scroll go by. What are you doing?
Trying to set up a bit where we thank our beautiful, beautiful patrons, all these wonderful names.
I'm sorry, I'm too distracted looking at these beautiful, beautiful patron names going by. Look at that one. I mean, if you wanted to be one of these people, patreon.com/cordkillers would be the place to go.
I mean, they're scratching our itch, like, because we're addicted.
I think as long as it's consensual, like,
we're addicted to their money.
And love. Might as well face it.
Well, God damn it.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.